show has begun. Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
What's the matter with you, Bentley? Ever since we got back from Bristol, you've been restive and fidgety.
That journey up to Bristol made me realize something. There's such a thing as staying too long in one place.
Well, that's just what I was shouting at you when I was banging on the door. Other people wanted to shave as well, you know.
I mean, Jim, we should get out of London a bit more. There's more to Britain than just London, you know. There's Wales and Northern Ireland and...
You better remember it, Bentley. Sporrans are bristling over the border.
Yes, that's it, Blackpool. See, we must get the BBC to send us somewhere else, Jim. The further the better. I don't mind if we do the show to an audience of Eskimos.
From the look of this lot, I think we are. Bentley, are you really going to ask the BBC to tout us all round the provinces? I mean, they'll think you're just being funny.
Jim, apart from my recent television series, I've never been less funny in my life. I want to go round and put my finger on the pulse of the nation. What are they talking about in Glasgow? What are they talking about in Manchester?
Same thing as they were talking about in Bristol.
Yeah, well, let's get on the road and meet them all. You see, Jim... I'm still a gypsy at heart. Just like the song. I love to go a-wandering, my pack upon my back. Faldery, faldera, faldery, faldera.
Well, why all the...
I've just remembered what they were talking about in Bristol.
It's a woman's world when she's in love. It's a woman's world. His kiss can make her glow. And that's what makes it so. It's a woman's world. Stars dance above. It's a lovely world. His footsteps at the door just prove that more and more his hopes, his dreams, and his ambitions, all the ups and downs she'll gladly share. She'll give her all without conditions. When he looks around, she'll be there. It's a woman's world. Stars dance above, it's a woman's world. And he's so glad it is. For when it's hers, it's his. It's a woman's world. But only because it's his.
Watch her, Jim. I just come up west to buy the wife a new diamond necklace. The old one's not wide enough to hide her tide mark.
Well, 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 it's wealthy Wal. I say, Wal, didn't I see your wife yesterday stuck in a snowdrift?
Snowdrift? They was fivers. I was handing over the housekeeping money.
Yeah.
Lovely being rich, you know. I think what makes you happiest is what you can do with the money.
Personally, I can always do with the money. Do you go in for philanthropy at all, Wal?
Not me. I got no time for stamp collecting. Mind you, I'm not mean with my millions. I'm helping right now with one of them charity shows what my missus and the other debutantes shove on every now and again. I've got a smashing act for it, Jim. Bloke I know, he takes an hammer, bites the head off, chews it up, then he takes the wooden bit and chews that up and all.
Is he a professional?
Oh, no, he's an amateur. Here. You want to buy a couple of tickets, Jermaine?
Not for that, thank you, Wallace, no. As a matter of fact, we have our own ideas on amateur dramatics, haven't we, Dunners?
Oh, yes, sir.
We read a bit in the paper which said that some of the most progressive plays are put on by the amateur dramatic societies of large industrial firms. So we sent an outside broadcast commentator along to describe one.
Well, here I am at an amateur performance of a verse play given by the Dramatic Society of Mrs. Wormwood and Galbury Limited, a firm of wholesale food merchants. Now, the audience are in their seats, and now the curtain is up. We see Clytemnestra, goddess of abundance and canteen waitress. The goddess speaks.
What, though in Russell mantle garbed, the something-something of the dawn doth walk?
Who there?
This is the voice of Menelaus, Greek warrior and van boy at the Goswell Road depot.
From far off Tuscany I come, my heart to pant with lust and base desire.
Unfortunately, in his hurry to get to the celebrated couch scene, he's skipped four lines. Clytemnestra gazes at him blankly.
My heart to pant with lust and base desire. With lust and base desire.
Well, come on, Iris. Say something if it's only I'll do.
What happened to while yet the night's perfumed like a rose and all the stars doing their courses speed?
Oh, no, lovers, I've jumped. I tell you what, Iris, I'll go out and come in again.
Oh, no, no. Carry on from With My Passion Strive.
My love, I will so with my passion strive that by my sword which in this hand I bear...
Eck.
What's the matter, Bert?
Forgot me sword.
What am I expected to do now?
Well, cover up, man, fam. Do anything.
That voice, which comes from offstage, belongs to Mr. Pilkington, the producer and chief costing clerk.
Cut to the soliloquy.
Thus doth reaction to inaction lend, that action which, or inaction from action, of a... On the road to Mandalay, where the flying fishes play.
The curtain has come down rather suddenly on Menelaus, and with the conclusion of the first act, the cast and producer leave the stage, the theatre, and though they don't know it yet, the employer of Mrs. Wormwood and Galway Limited.
Fife's talking point. Once again, we meet the Glums, our family of ordinary citizens facing bravely up to life's problems. Today, their talking point is, if all the world loves a lover, why do they have policemen in Hyde Park? So, over to the Glums.
Ringing, but there's no... hello, Mrs. Galloway. Oh, this is Eth. Could you please possibly pop next door and ask my mum to come to the phone? Oh, thanks ever so, Mrs. Galloway. I'll hang on. Oh, Ron, go over and look through the window again. Can you see whether the fog's still as thick?
No, Eth. There's somebody outside looking in.
That's your reflection, Ron. Turn the light off and you'll see out better. Hello?
Hello, beloved.
I'm talking into the phone, Ron. Hello? That you, Mum? Well, I'm at Ron's place and I think I'd better stay the night. What? Oh, really, Mum? Because of the fog. Oh, just a minute, Mum. Oh, Ron, you talk, because if you'd... Oh, Ron, what are you doing at the window?
Look, Eth. Look what I've drawn on my breath.
Off. Oh, Ron, come over here and reassure Mum. Tell her I only want to stay here because of how bad the fog is outside.
Right-ho, Eth. Hello? This is Ron. I've turned the light out and it's worse than you think. What?
Oh.
What did she say, Ron?
She just screamed, Eph. I think she's gone to get your dad.
Ron, you might have put it better. Oh, can't you do anything properly?
Yes, Eph.
Oh, no, I can't.
Go on, Eph, just a kiss.
Oh, no, Ron, no. Well, not with your smog mask on.
Hello, hello, hello. What's this? Snogging the smog? Here, let's have a bit of light on the subject. Oh, that's better. Ron, have you seen the budgerigar?
No, Dad.
I can't understand it. It was there this morning when I vacuumed the cage. Hey, what are you doing with the phone?
Well, I'm just ringing up home to say I'll have to stay here because of the fog.
Oh, yeah.
Would you have a word, Mr. Glum? They don't believe me.
Oh, certainly, yes. I'll smooth it down. Give it here. Hello? Glum Senior here? What? By golly, if your mum now I've got a ginny voice.
That's my dad, Mr. Glum.
Hello? Look here, old man. I assure you there's no harm in your Ether staying of here. It's all perfectly obnoxious. What? I know, old man, but the fog's really shocking down this way. I wouldn't send a dog out on a night like this.
Perhaps if Mrs. Glum had a word, Mr. Glum.
She's not here, Ether. I'll send her out. She's gone out to get a jug of supper. Hello? Hello? Now, where's he gone? Out, eh? What? Go on. Go on. Well, that shows you done it, eh?
What, Dad?
Well, some poor old dear just slipped down in the fog outside their home. They just had to carry her into the house. Hello? What's that, old man? The old dear wants to speak to me. Why? Well, put her on then, poor old thing. You have a listen, you two.
Right, now, Dad.
Hello, madam. I trust you're feeling better now. It's Mother. You stupid old faggot. What you doing up there? What? Oh, my dearest, you fell down and broke what? Oh, thank heavens, my heart turned over for a minute.
Ooh, why, Mr. Glum?
It's only her leg. I thought she'd broken a jug.
Saw a swallow building his nest. I guess they figured he knew best. So they built a town around it, and they called it Mobile. Where's that? Alabama. They took the swampland heavy with steam. They added people with a dream, and that dream became a heaven by the name of Mobile. No use you wondering where you should go. It's on the Gulf of Mexico, where the southern bells are ringing and the climate's ideal. It's a honeysuckle heaven by the name of Mobile. Mobile, no use you wondering where you should go. It's on the Gulf of Mexico, where the southern bells are ringing and the climate's ideal. Deal, it's a nice wheel. It's a honeysuckle heaven by the name of Mobile.
Hey, you two. soda, please. Say, Bentley, I went to see my specialist this morning. My old troubles come back.
Really, Your Grace? I thought her ladyship was away for the winter.
By Jove, they've an interesting life, though, these Harley Street Johnnies. You know, I'd like to get a peep in one of their appointment books, eh, Edward?
We shall give it to you right away, Your Grace. Sit tight, as if you could sit anything else. Sure. Next stop, Harley Street.
To the layman, the expensively bound appointment book of Sir James Fountain, the fashionable Harley Street surgeon, is just a list of names and times, such as January the 17th, 10:30 a.m., Trevor Manderley.
Trevor Manderley. I remember the first time I saw Manderley. Tall, quiet-looking chap with eyes set rather widely apart. He was very fond of CinemaScope. What made him book an appointment with me was something that had happened to him the evening before. It happened in a suburban railway station just near the up platform.
Oh, Trevor, if only I'd known you 10 years ago, then we wouldn't always have to meet in this furtive way.
Celia, my dearest, do you think I like us having to crouch under the tarpaulin of a goods truck? Particularly one that's carrying frozen cod.
Trevor, it's heaven, but where's it going to get us?
Well, on the door it says, when empty, return to Hull.
Trevor, heaven or Hull, we can't go on like this. But don't you see? My husband's bound to find out about our meetings eventually. He was suspicious yesterday when I took my hat off and four fillets fell out of the brim. We must say goodbye.
No, not goodbye, my sweet. Just as the French say, eau de cologne.
No, goodbye.
Then let me thank you for the happiness these brief encounters have brought a lonely man. Ever since that first moment in the buffet, when you dropped your rock cake and broke my big toe.
Oh, please, Trevor.
Celia, if this is goodbye, let me leave first. I want to remember you always as you are now. I shall never see a frozen cod again without thinking of your face.
Goodbye, Trevor.
Of course, I myself knew nothing of that tender little scene. Even when they were doing it at rehearsal, I was out having a beer. So when Trevor Manderley limped into my consulting room, to me he was just another sucker, a sufferer. He came straight to the point.
And so you see, Sir James, I have difficulty getting my shoe on, and it's very painful when I mamble.
Now, Manderley, when did you first get these pains in your head?
Not my head. The pain is in my toe.
Ah, it's a good job you mentioned that before I operated. Now, which toe?
Well, I don't know the medical name, but it's the little piggy that had roast beef.
Yes, it sounds like a possible piggyectomy. Where's my stethoscope? Now, Manderley, just open your shirt a minute so that I can put the icy cold metal bit on your warm tum.
Quiet,
please. I'm trying to listen. By golly, I don't know what you had for lunch, but it sounds like jazz club in there.
Sir James, does it mean a big operation?
It's hard to tell at this stage. Manderley, I'm going to ask you to stand against that X-ray machine for a moment. That's it.
Don't you want me to take my clothes off?
No, I'm just trying to see how much money you've got in your wallet. Very satisfactory. Yes, it will be a big operation. £500. I shan't bother about the odd change in the trouser pocket. Now, please step behind the screen and put your sock back on. I'll get my wife in to make the necessary arrangements. There you are, my dear. Tomorrow afternoon I shall be performing a postprandial piggyectomy. Please get on to the operating theatre and tell them to lay the table.
Very well, James.
Manderley, come out and meet my wife, will you?
Certainly, I would.
Celia!
Trevor! Oh!
She's fainted! Quick, Manderley, get a doctor!
When I came to, Trevor had gone, and James was pouring the water from the goldfish bowl over me. But when he spoke, his voice was strange.
Celia.
Celia. Hang on while I take my stethoscope off.
Celia. Celia, you were hanging onto my stethoscope. Celia, did you know that man?
I? Why, no. I swear I've never met Trevor Mandelay. I don't even know his name.
Celia, there is something on your face I've never seen there before.
Oh? What?
A goldfish.
Abruptly, he turned on his heel and strode out. All night long, I paced the bedroom with my mind in a turmoil and my hair in curlers. Oh, James was a jealous man. Had he guessed what Trevor had been to me? If he so much as suspected, then... Suddenly, my blood turned to ice. Tomorrow, he was operating on Trevor. And if he knew, then one pretended slip of the knife. Who would suspect? Trevor's life hung on one question. Did my husband know? Did my husband know?
Cool, then. I've been a changing her since we had tea with the Bristol old Vic.
Celia, you must tell me before the operation starts. How much does your husband know?
Hardly anything at all.
I don't mean about surgery. Celia, my dearest, I mean about us.
Oh, I don't know, but he asked me to be here. He wants me to be a theatre sister. Oh, if only we knew whether he suspects us. Oh, look out. Lie back on the operating table. He's coming.
Ah, Celia, good. Well, we'll waste no time on this one. Forceps.
Forceps.
Clamp.
Clamp.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Wait, Sir James. Haven't you forgotten something?
I don't think so. What?
Anesthetic.
Oh. Yeah. You realize that'll be extra.
Well, can't I write you out a check afterwards?
Yes, you might be able to. I've got a Ouija board. Right, I've got to give you a local anesthetic. I bought it off a bloke in the local. There. That'll take effect in a few seconds. Celia, would you just go over him with the thermometer and give me the area temperatures?
Right. Respiration 42. Temperature 98.4. Pulse 76 and a half. Pajamas 23 and 11.
Well, all right now. The local should have taken effect now. Give me that table fork. Now, Mandelay, do you feel anything here?
No.
Here?
No.
Here?
Oh!
Right. That's where I'll start. Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Clamp.
Clamp.
Music.
Music. Oh, Trevor, you're all right. He couldn't have known after all. The operation was a complete success. Your toe is cured.
Then I can play the violin again.
Surely you don't need your toe to play the violin?
I have to turn over the music, don't I? Oh, Celia, I'm glad your husband did not find out about us. He is a great surgeon, and it would have been wrong to hurt him.
But I didn't know.
James!
Yes, Mandelay. This fell out of your turn-up at our first appointment.
A frozen fillet.
Yes. The markings on it were identical with the ones which fell off the brim of my wife's hat.
Sir James, I've been a cad. How can I possibly make it up to you?
Money.
No. More than that.
More money.
Oh, James, I feel so ashamed.
Well, you've done quite well, my dear.
But from now on, all I want to be is your helpmate. Oh, give me the cod fillet. I shall steam it in the sterilizer, and we'll have a second honeymoon.
Sir James, I shall never understand why you didn't give way to jealousy when you had me under the knife.
Because, Mandelay, a surgeon like myself learns to be tolerant of the minor frailties of humanity. One thing, I have trained myself to be a surgeon first and a man second. Now then, what's next in my appointment book? Aha! 11:30 p.m., Lulu Laverne. Wacko!
What do you mean?
I'm shifting out of first and getting into second. Good night, all.
And a bit of rest to the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, and the keynotes. The announcer was David Dunhill. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...